Welcome to Ever Beyond, Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, depending on your position on this spinning globe, which who knows which way it's spinning and how fast it is. Yes, it's according to these static clocks that we have, today is the 19th of January 2014. Other people are saying different, that we've lost some days, that the earth has slowed down, or that everything else has speeded up around us, or that we've speeded up, or things have slowed down, or we're going to roll over and, you know, spin around and go backwards. Sometimes you really can't tell because the sky just seems to be in the same place. You know, the moon seems to be sort of there, rising in some places and you know, doing its thing. And then other days, everybody's saying, oh, look at all this stuff, and the, you know, they look at the satellites and all the there's all these things that are flying around out there that are out to get us, and that we've, you know, we're kind of very lucky not to be destroyed by now. So we're going through a bit of a dirty area of space, as they say. So we're going to get all kinds of things, and the sun's going to be doing things as well, because the sun is moving first. It's like pushing the prow of a boat moving through water. It's displacing space as it's moving, and things will fall into it. You know, it'll be quite a dusty, it'll be gritty. The sun's also doing its pole flip thing, and it's, you know, tumbling over end to end, really. It's more of a electrical process than we're kind of led to believe. It's, you know, we're led to believe it's a kind of mechanical process that we, you know, we're moving through space. But there's an electrical component to it, a plasma component that seems to be the form of life that is in the higher dimensions. It's plasma. And one of the things that we've been talking about, well, in fact, Nancy was mentioning it just a few minutes ago, and we see it, we saw it in the, and, you know, it's been a mythical thing. And this process which they call resurrection, or ascension. And it's the, apparently the body glows, the body you know, turns into a huge spark, vaporizes itself due to the intense heat of it and the intense light of it. It becomes instantly a mummify, and that might be an interesting reason why they used to wrap them up in bandages, to hold all the dust together as they turn into dust. Foof. But basically it's the initiation. It's it's the third initiation or the fourth initiation? I think it'll take you through the fourth. Your body no longer is required to support the spirit here on the earth, because there's enough spirit energy to form a body of itself, you know, allowing atoms to cloak and cloud around the electrical form that there is enough of now, having gone through all the initiations and cleared all the bodies. in order to become a being of pure energy. Okay, so let's roll back. You know, we seem to be made of sort of liquid. You know, how can we go from liquid to energy? You know, there's body, there's you know, muscle and flesh, and how does all that move? We're also told that we ascend to become crystalline. So does that mean that the carbon atoms in our body are instantly turned into silicon atoms? Because that's what you do. If you take the form of a carbon and you take it onto its next level up, you add another electron shell to it, you add enough neutrons and protons to the center, to the nucleus, to hold the electron shells, and you go from carbon to silicon. That's it's the next thing. If you look at the periodic table, if you go down a column, that's how it works. So we have carbon and silicon related to each other. They're both interesting elements in that they are electrical conductors in under certain circumstances, and in other circumstances they're not. They're known as semiconductors, and in fact crystals of silicon are used for current silicon dioxide crystals, quartz, very very pure, are made into very thin slices, and that's what we call the silicon chip. The silicon wafer is made of recrystallized silicon, and then upon the surface is etched using microphotography onto the surface circuitry, and some parts of the silicon are it's called doped. They're added certain elements to the things to make them into circuit tracks. And so basically, it's all made of silicon, but certain parts of the silicon are made conductive, and certain parts are left unconductive, and they become capacitors, and you know, all sorts of clever stuff. How they make silicon chips. So, as you can see, it forms. If you can form a computer out of silicon, that's how we do it at the moment. But you could, using newer technologies, and there's another new form of carbon which is called graphene, and you can essentially make graphene by taking a pencil and rubbing it on paper. And if you took an electric meter, you can, you know, measure that. And you'll get a current flow along it. In fact, you could even make a volume control, a rheostat, using a couple of paper clips, a pencil on some good heavy paper, and another paper clip, and you can slide it along it. You could control a synthesizer from a pencil line. That's what carbon can do. So carbon is pretty good, and as we say, carbon is the thing that if you form a crystalline form of carbon is what we call diamond. And if you can make thin diamond sheets, you can make crystal crystal chips, just like silicon chips, but this time made of diamond, and you can dope them and laser cut them and things like that. And that's what the next generation of computers are going to be. They're going to be diamond chips, tiny, working on light probably more than logic. How does that work? I'd like to see the software. I'd like to see how you write a program on a diamond computer. That would be pretty interesting. And probably there are right now, you know, teams of operatives who are feverishly ferreting and working away at the some deep mountain. Working on the new generation of computer software, you know, because you know, they're not going to be running Windows 7 or even Windows 8 on these machines. They're going to have operating systems that actually work, that actually do what they're supposed to do, and you know, they're built in military specifications. And why can't we have those, please? Thank you. Because they've got all the technology. We know they have. They've been there, you know, 100,000 years ahead of us. And here we are suffering and choking away on our smoky little planet, just like living in their exhaust pipe. So, silicon. Silicon is a nice, friendly element. I like silicon. I have here in my hand a silicon quartz crystal. Always good to talk to it because quantum entanglement means that whatever silicon crystal you talk to, it's got a kind of collective consciousness. So you talk to one silicon, you can talk to any. If you could get the right frequency, you could probably use remote viewing to get inside a computer. I mean, it might not make much sense if you just stood in there, because you just see streams of light globules streaming by. But if you were to learn how to read the code like that guy in The Matrix did, you know, he looks at the screen and said, oh, there's somebody in a restaurant, you know, that you could interpret code and see reality as it is, because here we are in a huge hologram. I had a thought while Nancy earlier was talking about the tuning into a particular frequency. Now, I don't know if anybody's experienced, I suppose most people have experienced what's called a strobe light, which is that funky little bright light. It's like a camera flash going off like dozens of times a second, and it makes it look like you're walking through a stop frame animation movie. That's called a stroboscope or a strobe light, and one of the things that you can use it for is you can look at your engine while it's running, and you can take the strobe and take off a plate and watch the flywheel as it's going around, and the flywheel's got certain markers on it, and by using the strobe to go off at exactly the moment that it's at the top of the stroke, then you can more or less freeze frame the it flashes for a short second, and because your eyes hold that flash, you're able to see it as if the flywheel is standing still, and you can actually read the markers, and you can do little fine adjustments that will bring that marker exactly to the top exactly the moment that your strobe light goes off. So what I'm saying is that the strobe is at the same frequency as the light, as the wheel, and when the two are at the same, working on the same pulse in the same rhythm, they become visible to each other. And that's a metaphor for our reality. When people talk about being on a multiple dimension, they're talking about vibrating at different frequencies. We're talking about people's vibes, people's energy systems. When you're vibrating at one, you may not be aware of another. So, for instance, some people might be focused on doom and gloom, while you might be focused on, somebody else might be focused on rainbows and unicorns, and neither of them will bump into each other in the street. You know, they just won't exist in the same universe. They may be 5 minutes later or earlier, but it won't be the same time. So we all have our own realities, and as Nancy was saying, you know, that we have our own reality, and we create our reality by what we think. I have so many questions for her, you know, so I'm going to get her back on the show, and we'll be talking about that. I was unable to be here today because she's got a dining partner, and I was at some. I made an arrangement with Rebecca to come on, but she's not here yet, and being in Central Time. There's always this thing, you know, everybody says, oh, yes, 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock, and, you know, it's never exactly the right time for people in Central Time. So, that's fun. We love that. So, if anybody would like to call in, I've got more or less an open show. I'll talk more about crystals, actually, because I think they're fun. And I'm just going to have a quick sip of tea. And this one, fortunately, didn't have a blue bottle in it. There are blue bottles in this house that are flying around like old Hercules jet engines. Not jet, pre-jet, turboprop engines. They're like... And you can see them. Then, you know, most flies kind of really zip across, but these things are flying really slow and heavy. They are just amazing things. They must levitate because, you know, I don't see how these things can fly. Anyway, so, oh yeah, levitation at insects. That's another interesting subject, so I want to have somebody on the show about. The fact that insects actually, you know, they levitate. They have, they generate gravity waves, as William Stillings has been talking about. They generate their own gravity, and the little wings that you see on a bumblebee, those poor little fellows, they would never lift a great big fat furry thing like that. It's in the structure of the body that has a gravity wave generator. And I think various experiments have been made. If you took a whole, you know, if you managed to get hold of a dead hive, for instance, or a, you know, a hive after summer, and you very painstakingly and carefully glued all the bodies of the bees to a little piece of board, you would find that the board weighed less than it did when you started, because these things generate gravity. They're gravity generators, and various insects have been known to, in fact, generate gravity, and experiments have been done doing this, and it really does work. You can make a little flying machine or a flying platform using the levitation of these insect wings. It's been done. It's real. I'm not kidding. So, let me see. Let's have a look at the chat room. There we go. Yes. GNO. A dangerous brain. What I know is. Is there no like a. Alright, okay. Everybody's gone agnostic today. So, how is everybody? I've just opened up Wolf Spirit chat room, so hello everybody, and there seems to be a good bunch of people. I was going to have Rebecca Jernigan on, but I think she's caught in the time zone gap, which I seem to, whenever I speak to anybody in Central America, they're always an hour out. No matter what time the show's supposed to be, there's always an hour out. Yeah. So, what's the beginning of your issues? What is, oh, everybody's new, yes. Yeah, anyway, knowledge. Yes. So, plasma. Back to the plasma thing. They'll all tie together. They'll all tie together in the end. Plasma is the kind of stuff that is drizzling all over space. You know, you see these clouds, and there are all these multiple colors and things like that. Well, the color gives you a definition of what frequency it is vibrating at, because that's what color is. Color is frequency. And it's an expression of frequency in the zone of frequency receptors, what we call the rods and the cones. In fact, the cones, because the rods just are, they're AM. They simply register brightness. And the cones register the colors, so you've got red, greens, blue, green. Red cones, blue cones, green cones, and they all are susceptible to a certain frequency. And it's exactly the opposite way when you've got a multicolored light bulb. You know, you see these rainbow light bulbs, and Frank's been talking about it. It's essentially three LEDs that match the frequencies of the cones in the back of your eye, and they reflect the same intensity. Now, there would be an interesting project to be able to tap into the signals that are coming down the optic nerve and reproduce that on a screen. That would be pretty awesome. And indeed, turn that into a, use a video camera to do it the other way so you could make blind people see. Well, that would be one thing. Or indeed, repair their DNA so that they could see, they wouldn't need a machine to do so. Yeah, so there are many ways of doing these things. I mean, I'm in the middle of being a scientist and a mystic, and it's a very odd place to be, because there are certainly, you know, the scientist wants, oh yeah, we could make a machine to do that, we could automate that, and then on the other hand, there are things that it's good for people to do, like think and see and walk for themselves. I see where you start saving labor and you end up being enslaved. And that's why they say, you know, before enlightenment, chop wood, get water. After enlightenment, chop wood, get water. It's still, you know, just because you're enlightened doesn't mean you don't have to do the daily chores. You know? And it's the feeling that we need to get away from doing the daily chores that gives us that makes us remove from our realities. He says, looking around at his slightly untidy house, but there are corridors. You can walk between the rooms, and that's as good as it gets. So, anyway, so who's Trixie? And yes, hello, Joy. Look at you, excellent. So, the flying program doesn't use biogravitics. Yes, interesting. Yes, hello, lad. Long time no see. So, yes, it's good to be here. I would like to chat with anybody about anything, because Rebecca is no longer here, or she's not here yet. She may come around at the top of the hour, having realised that she's an hour out in the time zone thing. But anyway, until that time, well, I could play some music, seeing it's the bottom of the hour. Let's see what we've got. I've got some really nice today. Oh yeah. Oh well, there you go. Here's one that was exactly what I was just talking about. This is from Van Morrison. It's called Enlightenment. Van the Man, indeed. Enlightenment, indeed, he says. Chop wood. There you go. Carry water. So, well, actually, I've been carrying wood. I haven't been able to chop the water yet today. I'll have to go out there with the axe. So, it's good to be here. It's Sunday. Tomorrow night, I'm going to be speaking with Sean David Morton about a book that's kind of totally done my head in, or undone my head in a way. It's like, you know, like you have a kind of little filing cabinet with little pieces of scrappy paper and backs of envelopes in your mind. That has, oh, I must find out about such and such, or I must know, you know, why did that happen? You know, there's a whole box of why, you know, a bunch of little whys, all kind of tangled up and scrunched up in the corner there. And never any adequate explanation. However, I've had to pull this little waste paper basket out and spread its contents all over the floor of my mind, because this book has tidied a lot of them up. It's the book is called The Sands of Time. I'm going to be speaking with Sean about it tomorrow night. He was somehow in the right place at the right time to receive this information. And it's the journals of the man who ran the black government, the secret government, and why it all started. And it's all connected with subjects that we've spoken about, particularly with Nancy. We spoke about the Philadelphia experiment and the rip in time and space that this thing caused, that is still, you know, rampaging through time. Not only did it cause this ship to go flying through space and time, falling through the membranes, but it also allowed in a certain much darker presence that really we didn't want to have sitting around anyway. So it turns out that these guys come in, and one of them is there in Area 51 in Dulce. No, not in Area 51, he's in Dulce. And he's in there, and they're making negotiations with these guys, and they're having none of it. And turns out that we have been saved from a certain imminent destruction because of the tears in space and time that the Philadelphia experiment, and indeed the Nazi Bell experiments. The Nazis were in touch with these extraterrestrial elements, extra-dimensional, and they wanted to tear their way into our dimension. So what they did was give the Nazis' instructions on how to make an apparent levitation device, but it also tore the time-space protection membrane enough so that they could get into our universe and start, basically harvesting whatever resources they could, including our souls and, you know, our planet and all that sort of stuff. But they're not very nice people. They don't like anybody who's not them, so that makes us an enemy. And anyway, so one of the reasons that this agency was created, it didn't even have a name, you know, these people, it's like this whole, you know, uber James Bond kind of scenario that's going on. But this guy is charged with finding out. He's a scientist. His father was a scientist. His father researched into time travel, and it's like Fringe meets Eureka meets the Philadelphia Experiment. You know, it spreads all over these time the last 60 years. That's why things have somehow gone light and gone dark, and timelines have been traveled, because these guys have been messing about with time, and every time you mess about with time, you create another timeline. Wow. So, another sup of tea.
See? Could you put a log on the fire? Thanks. Logs.
Don't burn yourself. There's a handle down there. yeah, I was just asking my friend to put some more logs on the fire. So, here we are. I've been reading this book, and it's been totally blowing my mind, and also bringing things together. And, you know, why was there a secret? What it is all about? What is the extraterrestrial connection? And what is the whole thing? Why am I fascinated with time travel? Why I've always been a fan of Doctor Who and all of these things with, you know, well, I've been a complete fan of sci-fi and all that stuff. Well, it turns out that a lot of it wasn't fiction. That it was just a kind of, this is how we're going, you know, Doctor Who, they managed to find a way of transcending time and space. No doubt some of the creatures that they came across, you know, in messing about outside time and space, probably looked a lot like the things that we see in Doctor Who. It may be more of a documentary series than a fiction. You never know. But yes, we love Doctor Who. I'm just gonna, thanks, Dave. Okay, so in the sands of time, turns out that so there's a doctor, and he comes along, and he's given a couple of tasks. One of them is to retrieve a secret. They know that Nazis had been messing about with time, and they'd been messing about with space travel and gravitational travel and all that stuff, and they'd create these things called the Nazi Bell, which was a gravity generator, and people witnessed it, you know, it was kind of wobbling around, floating around. At night they would see it flitting around, and the plasma, the stuff that's generated, the force that keeps it out of the out from plummeting down to the earth, that force they called Vril, V-R-I-L. I can't say it very well. I've got tooth missing. Vril, and Vril is a kind of orgone. It's like life force. It's like chi. It's one of the classifications of it. And apparently, it is created from blending extremes, like extreme heat and extreme cold. So you have something that's super cold, and you have something that's super heat, super hot. That generates Vril. That's another way, is that you force magnetic poles together. You take north pole of every magnet and push them together. You know, you've got a force going there. You're going to have to, you know, put them in a clamp, because they're trying to repel. So, I think the Philadelphia experience should have been limited to hot buttered bagels. Yes, Philadelphia with chives, I think, would have worked the best. Yeah. Anything on? No, there's nothing wrong with my audio. I'm still jabbering away. I would like people who are interested in this to come in and contact me if you're interested in the time travel thing. But anyway, let's go on about the book because it's a fascinating thing. So he gets to meet this guy that the Americans and Russians had preserved after the war. His title was Übergruppenführer, and his name was Dr. Heinz Kimmler. And he was your archetypal Nazi scientist. You know, he listened to Wagner on his phonograph, and they put him on this. It's totally out of James Bond, but you know, again, James Bond was based on realities. You know, these are all, there's not much, so much fiction, you know, there's realities, you know, to Goldfinger and people like that. Anyway, so he's up on this island, which is, it was a volcanic island, it had blown itself out, so it's just kind of the shell of something, and you can only get to it by submarine. It, you know, just went, it was like a huge fortress, and so you could only come in by a submarine, and there was a little cove that fishermen sheltered in, because the seas are awful around there. It's really the worst place to be. Anyway, so there was a Russian submarine and a US submarine there inside, and you know, again, we're talking something right out of a Bond movie. And the guy, his name is Ted Humphries, Theodore Humphries. That's not his real name. That's the guy that Sean. That's the name that Sean has managed to contrive for him. But it's another name. But you know, you'll never hear of him. He's the most famous guy you've never heard of. And he's he was taken to fix this thing. And amazingly, this guy's got the luck of the Irish and the luck of everybody put together. You know. The things that he got into and that he got out of in one piece, just amazing. So anyway, so he's up there for several weeks, and so there's the Russian crew of the nuclear submarine that they're there, and the power supply is the tapped a couple of, you know, Russian nuclear submarines have got great big you know, crocodile clips that they've attached the power supply to, and you know, they're running off the nuclear reactor in the submarine, so there's always hot water. That's the good thing about being on a nuclear submarine, apparently. It's always hot showers, because, you know, it uses coolant to cool the engine down. Anyway, so he's up there on this island. I can't remember the name of the island. It's like a sort of, isn't like a St. Helens or something. Anyway, it's not St. Helens. But anyway, up on the island. And he's in this Nazi guy's living quarters, and it's, you know, it's just as you'd imagine from some wartime movie. And you know, there he was, you know, and he's tall and thin, and he's, you know, listening to Wagner on his player and crying to the Wagner, of course, you know. But anyway, he's the scientist that was working on the he worked on loads of things, including, you know, building concentration camps so that he could kill millions of people at once, or at least many thousands of people all at once. So he wasn't exactly a very nice guy, and various other people had been trying to get the secrets out of him. The secret that they were looking for is it's the one they want, right? He had been able to open a portal and close it again. He'd been able to do the whole process, whereas with the Philadelphia Explorer and the Nazi Bell, they'd only managed to open the portals, and they hadn't managed to close them again. And it was the reversal secret that was the one thing that they needed to know. And the old Nazi also knew this guy's father, because they were, you know, scientists and working before the war and all that stuff. Anyway, so eventually he gets to know this guy, and you see, you know, he drinks Russian vodka every day, so by 3 o'clock he's totally useless and stomping around, you know, singing Deutschland über alles or something like that. But by the time you know, a few weeks go by, and he, you know, it's basically he's imprisoned with this guy, and has to extract this secret from him. Eventually, he does get it. He does somehow merge and understand. Somehow, gets to be in a sense of compassion with him, so that he can then tune in and understand what the secret is. He gets it, and he escapes. But it's a real, it, you know, again, it's just like something out of James Bond. He escapes with the Russian, the beautiful Russian scientist assistant called Irina. And they escape off the island, and they have a shootout with the Russian soldiers, and they're all like the old lady who was like the cleaner. She was a KGB agent, KGB agent, etc. And you know, on their way out, they had to kill all these people. And it, again, you know, it's like the janitor, the they're all agents, and you know, it's a big shootout at the end. Anyway, so that's what they get to. And the warhead on board the Russian submarine also is set to explode, which then explodes after them as they're rescued by the Allied submarine that had been called there and, you know, broke all the speed limits and nearly exploded itself because it was a nuclear sub, and got to rescue them and get out just and get to the bottom of the sea just before the bomb goes off. And that's the beginning of the books. Well, exciting. Anyway, so he somehow proves himself having done that. Obviously, he keeps back a couple of secrets just so he's got a bargaining chip. He's very this guy really knows how to play. You know, he's a real poker player and brinksman. So a very exciting read, and it answers a lot of the questions. Mainly, you know, what happened at the Philadelphia experiment, and why do we have all the UFOs, and what all this is about. I would recommend getting it. Right, okay, so Tracy, what if none of our believed past, even the trauma wars, never happened? What if this is the first time, and that's why we all think it's so wrong? Are you saying, Trace, that we've got perhaps implanted memories of all the wars and the trauma? That's a very interesting point, isn't it? So, has anyone read Sean's book, Sands of Time? Yes. Yes. This. All right. Okay, so... All right. Okay, so... that's a very interesting point, Tracy, that we could be in a completely innocent state. Yeah. Here's another one. Do you think so much time travel has happened, and that's the reason so many people have missing time? Well, according to what Nancy was saying on the show just now, and it's something I think it slips by. And again, I want to drill her down on this one: is how do we know? You know, why was it all right? You know, everything seemed to be really good in the 90s, and then suddenly everything went dark. And, you know, there was 9/11, and, you know, we've gone down a dark path. And what she says is that the timelines have been moved, and that, or rather, that the people who are coming back, who want to help, didn't go into a bliss, but actually decided consciously to stay until everybody had been cleared out from the negative timelines. So we could look upon this as a kind of rescue mission. This is why we're here, and this is why people are not woken up, because these are the people who are the least woken up of all the timelines. These are the people that are most controlled. The people that are on the timeline that we're on are the most controlled and the most deeply traumatized and the most deeply into the game than of all the other timelines, and this is the one that needs healing. I think that's the point. So, yes, why don't you call in, Tracy? Will you read this story? It's a big book, actually. It's a long book. And Sean does have an audio book. But, read this story. Wow. Wow. Yeah, I get this. I get the thing. You know, like many of these... well, there has been several episodes of Doctor Who where a whole horrendous future opened up. And he goes back in time and heals the timeline. And the only people that remember it are her, is him and the assistant. And the assistant had this incredible, you know, year-long journey around the world telling people about the Doctor being a kind of John the Baptist kind of character. And getting everybody to focus on one particular time, one particular moment, where they were all, you know, the whole human race had focused on him, and he was able to transcend a magic spell that the Master had played on him, his mortal enemy. And by everybody believing in the Doctor gained gained supernatural powers, much more than he normally does. And he kind of floats up out of this prison that he's in, and is able to, you know, just will things to happen. And so that's one kind of good way. That was the positive way of creating a super being that can vanquish the evil, which is basically what, you know, what the Doctor represents. You know, it's like everybody calling on Jesus and praying to Jesus. When you pray to someone, you send them energy. It's like a little credit. That's the way it works. All right. Right, so let's just... do you mean like they're on a Kuan Yin vibration? Yes, it's Bodhisattva. Most of the people, probably all the people here, are here as a Bodhisattvic... commitment to enlighten the earth. To, you know, this is why it's so hard, because we're on the trickiest timeline, and B, why people are so dense, because we're on the trickiest timeline, and this is the one that they've been trying to create all these years using the looking glass technology and all of that stuff, being. Are you going? All right, okay. So, yeah, why not call in? Who is the reader on Sean? I think Sean is reading it himself. So, yeah, he's got the thing in. But, yeah, Tracy, why don't you come in? Because you've got a book that you're reading, Trace, and seeing if that has any connection with what we're talking about now. All right, so going on through the book, I'm trying to get to the next phase. So he's met by this the literal shadowy organization, the literal darkened room with the overhead lights, that the guy kind of leans forward into the light and you see is the top of his face, and it's all very kind of, oh yes, Mr. Humphrey, Dr. Humphrey, and all this business. In the end, he turns out to become one of those people. Through the most enormous luck, that, you know, he has insights. He's been given insights. So, and it turns out that his father disappeared when he was 17. Disappeared, didn't die, he disappeared. They found his car, it disappeared. He'd spoken to some woman in a restaurant, that's the last they saw of him. And it turns out that his father disappeared into the future. He time traveled into the future, because, you know, he was a researcher into time travel. And so he operates from within that time, from within the future. It's very bizarre. There's a lot of very kind of, you know, beyond the fringe of what you could imagine was real science, but apparently seems to be true because it kind of all worked out. So the question is, what happened to the holes in space-time through which the Philadelphia Experiment created and tore. It turns out there were six of them, two really big ones and four smaller ones. And the big one was Philadelphia, the other one was from the Nazi Bell, and there were some smaller ones from, I think, nuclear explosions or something like that. A lot of it is to do with doing things on specific days and times when cycles coincide and they cross zero and all that stuff. And it turns out that the ETs that the Nazis were in touch with were not particularly benevolent, and that they made them do their Nazi Bell experiments on a specific day that would be like pushing a swing, you know, just giving a push to a swing. And that the Philadelphia experiment itself was timed just push that spring harder at the right time, so that it would swing further. And that's what tore the holes in space-time. So what they needed to do, that was one of the projects. But another of the projects is to stop whatever might come through the holes in the meantime. So there was two projects started, you know. One, fix the hole, and two, you know, what do we do about these things? And of course, you know, whenever he made notes, his assistants would copy them and give them to the bigger powers, and they would, you know, construct things according to his dimensions and notes. And as he discovered things, these other teams that he didn't know about were building and creating the machines that he was just coming up with in his mind. He also had visitations from people that would be there one minute and not there the next. But they were real people, and they would leave notes and leave things. Turns out these were people popping back in time from the future. One of them was called Dr. Rufus Henry, a black man. And I believe that the character Henry Deacon in the series Eureka is based on him, because he was a genius. Yeah, hopefully Sean stays on point. Well, it's a bit like riding a wild horse, isn't it? Anyway, so we'll see. I mean, I'm sure that the show is going to be fun tomorrow. We're trying to find some answers to the questions that we've already had. And the question is, you know, what was the Philadelphia experiment? You know, why did Tesla end up in poverty? What happened? What did they discover? And what have they been using it for? Now, the book doesn't actually mention anything about the corporation. You know, whether it's Bechtel or what's that other one? Bayer Dynamic. Yeah, I think Bayer Dynamic. You know, in all these sci-fi movies, they have this corporation. You know, there's always a corporation, and it's always called something dynamic. In Fringe, for instance, it was called Massive Dynamic. You know, there's always this dying in there. All right, okay. So, anyway, there's a company called Bayer Dynamic, and I'm sure that they're connected with this whole business. They're the corporation that sponsors the secret projects that are then, you know, further employed by the military, etc., and this whole revolving door that creates the military-industrial complex, which last night I was talking to Eva, and I came up with it's the satanic industrial complex, indeed. And that's kind of more to the point. The satanic human trafficking military-industrial complex. It gets bigger. So, we have the time traveler. This guy, he has these visitations from Rufus, who gives him clues as to how these time equations work. And once he understands how the equations work, he gets a better picture of a model, so then he can build a better machine that will generate the waves. And of course, his aim is to get something, you know, the size of a pager, a little, you know, cigarette packet, you can travel through time with something the size of a cigarette packet. And indeed, by the time the book comes to a close, they've got something like that because, well, guess how these visitations happened? These are visitations from people in the future coming back to the past to deliver these little messages. It would also turn out that when people came back through space-time, there were weather phenomena. There was thunder and lightning and all sorts of things that go on when somebody travels through space and time. So obviously there's some kind of vacuum and potential building up and doing all that sort of stuff. What's the show time? It'll be 1 a.m. UK time, and that's 5 p.m. PST and 8 p.m. EST. A twist of fate. A twist of lemon. Yes. So, well, Sam's is saying, are we on a false timeline? Well, we're here on a timeline that apparently, according to Nancy, we've all volunteered for. You know, if you're awake, you've volunteered for it. If you're not, this is why the other lot are here. We're here to wake up the rest of everybody, or as many as we can. A lot of people we may have known in our lifetimes have left this planet. Well, yeah, they've moved on. Did they move on to a good place or a bad place? Well, let's hope that the clearing up we're doing now helps them and us all move on to a good place when it's time. So, time. Planetary rotation changes. We think of time in terms of, you know, a day is the time when from sunrise to sunrise. Well, it's not that exactly, because that changes because the Earth rolls in its orbit very slowly. And so we have these things called the seasons. So it's not exactly the same time every day. And indeed, here in the northern climes of Scotland, 57 degrees north, we have quite a swing, and we go from 3-hour days in the winter to 3-hour nights in the summer. And it can be beautiful. Both ends can be rather beautiful. Sometimes on those very long nights we get some very clear skies, and then it's a wonder to behold. Sometimes on the very long days we have some beautiful cloud formations, also a wonder to behold. That's why I like to live here. The people are beautiful. Everyone can sing. It's great. England is full of people who can't sing, but Scotland is full of people who can sing. It's just nothing to know. It's like, okay. Anyway. Trace, yeah, you can call in on. Oh, did I just play it? Yes, I did. Oh, that was great. You can call in. Just call my number, my Skype, Tracy. Is that you, maybe? Yes, oh, that is you. All right, so I'll call your office. Let's see what Tracy's got to add. So we were looking. Yes, 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 yes. Beep. Boop, 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 boop. There you are.
Hi, Steve.
Hello. Oh, you're very far away. Pick up your headphones.
I have my laptop.
You have your laptop.
Is it? Yeah.
Can you bring it in a bit closer? That sounds better.
How's that sound?
Well, still a bit soft, but I can turn you up on the mixer. There you go. Hi, Tracy, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very. And here is the time that we're in. The time. You know, things are happening in time. Time's slowing down. Speed of light ain't what it used to be. Even Pluto's not a planet anymore. So welcome to the 21st century. And so I've been talking about the whole sort of some of the gist of Sean's book, and you've been reading a book called something Breaking the Matrix.
The Code to the Matrix.
Code to the Matrix. Tell us about that. Tell us what you're
it's
reading.
It's by someone who's using an anagram, which I love, called Sevan Bomer. His work is awesome. Now, between what he's done, and I've been contacting him, with the things that you and I have talked about for the last 3 years. He's actually asking for copies of what I do because I don't do his stuff word for word. So it's turning out to be quite a blast lately. So I'm being the librarian and having a lot of fun at it.
All right, well, that was interesting. You just got a complete hit on the servers there. Hang on, let me just, I'm just trying to reconnect the streams because the streams just got hit. None of them are green yet. I don't know. I don't know if my neighbor's downloading a YouTube or something. Oh, there they are, all back in there. That's good. All right. Okay, yeah, we're back online now. So, sorry about that, everybody. I don't know how come our call didn't get disconnected, but there you go. So, here we are. We are speaking with Tracy Kennedy. So, you start again, Tracy. You were talking about a book by someone with a weird name.
Yes, the book is called The Code to the Matrix. It's by Sevan Bomar. So he's using an anagram, which I'll talk about at the end. But I've been in contact with this guy since a lot of my work in the past couple of years has been very similar to his. So I'm reading some of the stuff, but also adding a lot of the things that I've researched. So I have permission to read this book live on air. And he's had a computer voice up until now, so he's going to redo his audio thing with my voice and most likely add the stuff that I've added as well. So,
oh, that's lovely. So you're gonna yeah, do a narration for him. Wonderful, Tracy.
Yes.
That's great. That'll get your voice heard. You'll get famous for a voice. Voiceovers and things.
Oh, well. Well, it's one thing I can't do. Read a good story.
Yeah, whatever you've got in abundance, you know, that's what you use to trade. Good. Very good. Yeah, so, yes, indeed. Maybe I should read out Sean's book. It's a hell of a book. It's like, yeah, it's about 600 pages, and it's, very small letters. You know what I had to do? I had to get a new super bright LED light and wear special glasses. Now, what's this? Alright. Oh, yeah, this is the letter that he got from his father before he disappeared. I'll read this one. Okay, so the book is about this scientist. His name's Ted, and so this is the letter that he got from his father when he was 17 years old, and he never saw him after this. So he says, "Teddy, I need to go away, and you probably won't see me again for a very long time." In capital letters, "Call Uncle Bob. He will help you with everything. Sell the house and move in with him and Judy. They will take care of you until you get on your own. The profits from the house and the bank account are yours to help set you up when you graduate college. University of Southern California is all taken care of. Make something of yourself. You have what it takes. I wish I could tell you more, but I don't have the time. I love you more than my own life. I'm sorry for all that I could not be for you. We will see each other again someday. In time. I promise. Dad." So that's the last thing he heard from his dad. Bless.
Wow.
So, you know, we see that there's there's trauma all along the way, and it, you know, it was a pretty traumatic time anyway, you know, the late 40s, and you know, the whole war, and seeing all the aftermath and seeing the realities of what happened. Because I think a lot of people didn't know what was going on. Like in Iraq, you know, a lot of people in America don't know what's going on there. So your book is about what?
Well, my book has some alternative ideas to history. quite a few, and it's looking at the grammar and the sounds and the words of English, everything from gods being planets and our dances being representation of orbits to time changes and stargates and, well, I'm just everything I love. It's weird and it's a lot of fun. And it makes me think about everything I say now because I wonder, geez, I wonder what that word really means.
Yeah, and what spoken commands we're giving out when we're
so
just
we
saying
start
things.
Part.
Go on.
I'm sorry, JP, you're cutting in and out enough.
Oh, sorry, just keep talking. We're getting a bit of... Oh, yes, we're getting some disturbance here. Can I turn off the Wi-Fi? Hang on.
Okay.
No, keep going, Tracy. I'm getting you perfectly.
Okay. So, little things like... that I hadn't even thought of, like peace, which sounds like a wonderful word, but what peace means is to take something and divide it. Pieces, what do we send to help with the peace? We send units, which is also separation and fragmentation. So we send peace units to speak for war. Well, the only thing peace can do is divide. The only thing units can do is divide. Hero comes from a word for temple priestesses, which also means whore, and harlot, and hate. So a lot of the words we use have such different meanings. It could be possibly why we have so many words that sound the same and written differently, because they want us to repeat those words over and over again. So we've been talking about the origin of words and alternative history and how the ancient Zulu people, which a lot of people have heard about, Baba Credo Mutawa and his necklace of the ages that actually spoke of being from Mars, another planet before that, but being from Mars and coming to Atlantis. The Martian Wars there separated people. Some went to Atlantis, some went to Lemuria. We have different aspects of what could have happened, but it looks like the Lemurians left in ships and their land was destroyed, and it looks like Atlantis sunk purposely. So it's part of our mermaid stories, and I've talked about different backgrounds. A lot of people think that, you know, all the elites really hate brown people. No, they hate pretty much everyone who's poor. But even Queen Victoria, and I haven't gotten into this part, talked about her brothers, the Zulu, and forced her fighters to protect them when they were attacked. And it was only after her death that the Zulu tribe was actually ever hurt by British soldiers. So it's going to be fun because of his work, because of the stuff I've done. So I've been sending him notes after each one. So, you know, he's liking where I'm going with it. I, of course, love his work. And somebody sent me one segment, and it was all computer generated, which I just hate. So I said, you know what, I'm going to read it and I'll send you a copy. So we're trading, and so far he's loving it, and I'm sending him my notes on this, so he's going to update his stuff too. So it's awesome.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So, that might be an interesting thing to actually put some voices on some of these things that are generated, because a lot of people think that their voice is not good, or they don't pronounce very well. So it's always nice to have something read out nicely.
It's nice to have it nice. I like it nice. You like it nice? It's nice, isn't it?
I'm going to have a nice cup of tea and shut up.
Yeah. But we're talking about the time thing, too. And after reading a couple of it, I was asking the same questions as I asked you. What if none of this happened? What if we've never gone through trauma before, and that's why we're so traumatized by it now? Because it's never happened before, and we don't know how to react. What if everything is a lie? And obviously, some of the things are a lie. We see Africa on a map, and it's wrong in every single map ever taught in any school ever. Africa, you could put basically all the other continents inside Africa.
Yeah, the whole Mercator projection thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's completely, completely wrong. So if one thing's wrong, pretty much everything's wrong. And maybe it's wrong for a reason, because they've gone back and, you know, you kill a bug in 1845 and all of a sudden there's no England. You know, we don't know how many times things have been changed. And with what I've been feeling lately, even on a personal level, and hearing other people talk about how they're losing time and they're missing time, time seems different, and I'm not anywhere near where I was a couple weeks ago. I'm not the same person. I don't think the same way. I'm changing day to day to day, and a lot of people are. What if so many things have been changed, they're going back trying to tweak this, tweak that, that some of us are just thrown right out of the loop? We're not there anymore. I don't know what time it is. I don't know when I can't rhythm myself when to wake up. I try to go outside and get some sun, even though it's winter, but we're not getting much light, so I can't synchronize.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, I speak to loads of people a lot, you know, and everywhere people are complaining to me, I can't sleep at night, I can only sleep in the daytime. I say, oh, welcome to the club. You know, this has been my reality for several years. And I've always felt I've been kind of ahead of something. Somehow, like, it's just, I believe that reality comes down in these layers. And you can plant a thought in one layer, and it gradually drops down like ink into water, and becomes reality as it drops down. And some people are tuned into these very fine realities that are thoughts, and some people are getting down into ideals which have been, you know, thoughts that have been turned into an idea that become crystallized. And they become reality, but it takes time for them to filter down these layers. And I think that's how people can look into the future, because we're on a map, and if you go up those to the more finer, subtle levels, you find that you're actually looking at the future when you're in the now. Does that make sense? Am I making sense to you? Are you still there, even? Oh, yeah, you
it's
are.
Nice. It's very nice. Want to come
nice? I got nice, nice. So. Tracy.
I don't know, Jay. Something's very wrong, and I'm feeling that, and trying to just, continue. I can't stop anything. I can try to do the best for myself, try to stay entertaining and as light as possible and still give information that I at least want to hear. And I'm in it for the duration, so I'm just trying to stay as stable as I possibly can, quiet and spacious, and look inside. Because I don't believe in anything out here anymore. I don't believe in it. I don't care about the governments. I don't care about whether or not my garbage is picked up. I don't care if people go on the streets and riot. I don't believe in any of it anymore. I'm not even quite sure I'm really doing this, so I'm just going to keep going.
are we really here on virtual air? You know, how much of all this is real? You know, and you know, it's real enough to me. You know, I burn my fingers on the fire most days. That's pretty real, or it seems real. It seems real that that's what the program says. If you put your fingers on a hot thing, then they'll fizzle and they'll eventually hurt and blister up. And I'm trying to rewrite that program, to be honest, because I tell you, I don't like blisters. So what I'm doing is trying to burn, it's a bit like, what do they call it, when you walk on the coals. It's that sort of attitude towards burning flesh. Because otherwise I'm going to spend a fortune on baking soda.
Oh, the firewalk.
Yeah, the firewalk, that's the one.
You're right, it's not stupid. It's a little bit stupid. You need to be sure that you really, really believe in that before you step on the hot coals.
Yeah.
Run really fast.
Totally. I've been working on that. I do burn my fingers quite a lot because, you know, I've got two stoves and they got metal handles, and sometimes the handles are hot and sometimes they're cool enough to touch, and I can never know until I've actually touched it, which is a bit stupid really, but there you go. Long story. Anyway, so
have you tried something called oven mitts?
Oven mitts. I know, it's always gloves. You know, I hate wearing gloves either. Yeah.
Then, maybe you like paint.
Yeah, maybe I like paint. What I'd like is skin that didn't burn.
Stop letting that happen.
I want to change my DNA so my skin doesn't burn when it touches hot things. Maybe I could change some of that carbon early into silicon. If I had silicon fingers, I could pick anything up. Maybe that's what silicone is. You know, it's heat-proof plastics. It's amazing. I think silicone is amazing, don't you? You can just stick it in the oven and it doesn't turn into a blob. You can bake cakes in it.
I don't think I have any silicone.
No, you haven't got any of these. You know, you can get a baking tray and it's totally flexible. It looks like rubber. It looks like plastic. But it'll go into a 400 degree oven and it'll remain exactly as it is. You can put it in the freezer and it won't crack. It'll still stay soft and flexible. It's amazing stuff.
No.
I think it's related to the silicone that they use in breast implants. It's some form of silicon dioxide, silica gel, maybe? No. So, meanwhile, okay. It's probably some spin-off from a space program somewhere.
Probably.
So, Trace, what have you got so far in your book, at the beginning of your book? How is it? What are the sort of highlights of the week's reading that you've given?
Well, it's brought up a lot of debate. We're starting part 4, which I a little bit jumped into on Friday, so we're doing that Monday, and that's going to be on Turtle Island News and Wolf Spirit Radio and thesechangingtimes.net as well. And then Tuesday we go to part 5. Now, where we were talking about Friday was some of the East African myths and stories that connect to a lot of the Asian stories, and later to English. We were talking about Scandinavian roots of English a lot of the gods actually being named after planets and their movements, and even a lot of the myths, like the angels with their names, like that still end in Al. When I talked about who Al was, and we talked about Pluto and the orbits, and I'm thinking that a lot of the ancient gods that were named for planets, basically, that there have been a lot of people on this planet who knew the cycles of the planet, knew that certain energies were brought in by those planets, and they prayed to those energies. So when they'd say a god came down, they were basically manifesting the energy of that time. Real or not, maybe, you know, maybe Jupiter, Saturn, Mars is a being, not, well, it is a being as far as I'm concerned. I think we have a far too limited idea of what sentience is, but I think our planet is alive and most likely chooses avatars here to walk around. And if we prayed to her, we would probably have more of her energy. So I think a lot of things have been here to usurp our energy and use us like toys, like the planets being used right now. And we've made the mistake to think they were gods, and they're not. And so that's what I've gone through. So I've done my best to tick just about every group off. And if I haven't gotten to you yet, don't worry, I got 5 more parts.
So we've got about half an hour left, so that's plenty of time to talk about things. I'm interested in this whole idea that we're kind of wrong. We're on the wrong. I've always had this. This is all wrong feeling. This shouldn't be happening sort of feeling. But here it is, and, you know, deal with it. But I've had that for a very long time, and I think a lot of people have. And it's like, you know, this whole thing that Morpheus says, like a splinter in your mind. But I think it might be, you know, that's what they're talking about. The Matrix is a timeline.
And it feels wrong.
It feels wrong, and it feels like there's nothing you can do about it. That's another thing. So they can't be right, you know. That's like the nothing you can do about it is like, that's like somebody's telling me. I'm saying there's something wrong. And the response is, there's nothing you can do about it. And it's like, that's a threat sort of voice. It's not an information. So I think we can work around that. Yeah. What do you think?
I'm with you. It feels wrong. And I think they've gone back enough times and tweaked enough things to make many of us feel helpless, to show us certain timelines that look like we were helpless, that all of our leaders are fake, all of our leaders have been usurped. And, well, of course it would be. The history of the planet so far that I've talked about is every single leader has betrayed us, his own people, every single one. And I'm also touching on those sacred cows, people that I actually look up to. And I know for a fact, because my dad was in the music industry, and not in a small way, in a very big corporate way.
He was the chairman of the board.
That's right. And only certain people get jobs. You don't make the $1 million until you sign on the dotted line, and some of the signatures are your soul. He left, and his contract was so hard after he left that he was not allowed to write produce or sing live for 10 years. So when you leave, all the stories we've heard that there's repercussions, he was just a singer. And that's how it was. And he hadn't signed the contract. So if that's what they would do to a singer, can you imagine what they do to world leaders who are on the television and known by billions of people? So I think things have been changed. Things are people are told what to do and what not to do. And some of our best and brightest have betrayed us, right to our faces. And if there was a gun to my son's head and I was told, do this or else, I'd do it. I would too be one of those people saying, you know what, all of a sudden, all the aliens are good. Because those are the only people who actually, I forget the guy's name, but he's even been on CNN. He's making all kinds of money right now. He's got this movie called Sirius that's being backed. Why is he different? He's different because he said the aliens are all good guys. Those are the ones who don't disappear or fall down the elevator shaft under some bullets. I don't want to be one of those guys.
So, yeah. He's got a big smile, isn't he? Anyway, big, wide, toothy smile. Very Tyrannosaurus Rex. Anyway, the Morton book says, you know, there are ETs and there are extra dimensionals and they don't like us at all. The quest is how do we deal with whatever comes through the gates. So what they had to do is create a space program that also create defensive shields, and HAARP is part of the defensive shield program. And indeed it may be that chemtrails are there to protect us from this invading force, because here's the thing, is that they did have a weapon, and it did. They did send, you know, basically sent a kinetic missile at us. It was basically a big slug, you know, several tons, and it was aimed at London. And I think this was in the mid-90s. I think. But anyway, this thing was there, and they shot it out of the sky. They have an advanced laser system, use a gas laser that they teleport. Get this, they teleport it out there. There are fleets, yeah, there is a space fleet, but the main weapon is held on Earth and they teleport it to where it's needed. It does its job and then it teleports back to the lab. How cool is that? How sci-fi is that?
How sci-fi is that? Yeah. The first time Tesla turned on his machine, it hit the ionosphere and just happened to cause the biggest, they were saying it was a meteor strike in a non-populated part of
Tunguska.
Yes, yes, but it happened to be the exact same time Tesla turned on that thing, and it didn't look like a meteor.
Kaboom. Yes, the power of plasma. We've talked about plasma at various points, and this is part of tonight's theme, is plasma. And plasma is the same thing as a spark, which is the same thing as an arc, which is what I believe is the Ark of the Covenant, is the same as arc welding, and is the same as the arc that is a transdimensional gateway. So,
arc. The archangels.
Archangels. The shining
the
ones.
The archangel. We saw something bright. We felt something different. And it wanted our souls. You know, all of the old stories about aliens and angels, if they didn't all end the exact same way, I'd say, okay, let's give them a chance. But they usually come with gifts, then there's temples made, then, you know, there's wars, and then there's fighting, and then there's more weaponry, and then there's blood sacrifices, then there's running and screaming, and then we have to kill those angels, demons, da 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 da. So I'm thinking, let's forget all the gods or anyone who thinks we should worship them, because it never works out good.
Never ends well with the old worshipping of the big annoying deities, not annoying, grumpy, you know. Actually, I was looking, you know, I haven't shaved for quite a few months, and I was looking at my beard the other day, and I thought, God, it looks like one of those Anunnaki beards you see in the Egyptian paintings. You know, the way it kind of curls out from, you know, it comes down the chin and then curls out either side. It's just doing that. I think, oh, Jesus, yeah.
Well, I don't know if he was responsible, but what we do know for a fact is that his machinery would hit the ionosphere when he worked it. The second time, it didn't do that. Not sure if it was a targeted blow, if he could change it, but if they realized they could use that for harm, they would, because fireworks were supposed to be just fireworks, not gunpowder. It was supposed to be something bright and pretty, and then it became death. Nuclear power is supposed to be power station, but it became death. Working iron was for jewelry, but it became swords. I'm sorry, I have no faith in any technology. We should stop using it, because, again, we use it, it helps, then there's the running and the screaming and the sacrifice and the death, even with that. Same thing.
A lot of the contacts that we've been talking about, you know, particularly contacts with Sasquatch people and these others, interdimensionals and stuff like that, they don't wear clothes. They don't have toys like we do. We don't have computers. And yet they're regarded as advanced intelligence. Obviously, intelligence doesn't have anything to do very much with, you know, toys. You know, any kid can work an iPad, but it's, you know, it's being able to build the toys. Now that takes intelligence. But the main thing is, it doesn't show you how advanced you are. It always seems to be a matter of, you know, more compassion. That's the advanced ones. And then it gets to the point of compassion when you realize that because of compassion, you can't interfere anymore.
If they were advanced, they wouldn't need ships. They wouldn't need stuff, and they certainly wouldn't need our worship. I am not impressed by the aliens who travel billions of miles and apparently can't park that thing. Because they're occasionally crashing. That seems human to me. Sorry, not buying it. I'm sure this cosmos is populated. You look here, though, why would anything want to stop here? There's nothing to offer. There's nothing. The planet is beautiful, but we're doing a good job. You know, on the weekend, the United States was pretty much completely irradiated from three accidents that happened. One is just weird. And why would anything stop? They'd wait till we're finished, because we're doing a pretty good job of ending things. So I wouldn't come down here. Now, of course, there's people going to say it's because, you know, the aliens are our friends and they want to save us. But, you know, I've read a lot of books. I've read a lot of stories. I've read a lot of scriptures. As soon as something says it wants to save you, you need to kill that thing. Kill it.
I like your approach to xenopolitics.
Yep. Kill it now.
Kill it quickly.
Yeah. If it came and said, hey, how you doing? But just offering us help, saying we want to save you people because we love you so much. The one thing that would make sense to me, and I am going to be completely cutthroat honest, is saying, at this point, in front of the entire world, we will not let you blow up this planet because that messes up everything in the cosmos. One little thing blowing up changes all things. How we've gotten away with this being allowed, the devastation that we're doing on this planet, shows me that things, they have a way to stop us that will maybe, you know, will look like Mars that is half its size, and we know that because of the clusters of Mars that's all over the place, pieces of Mars. Unless they have shielding that can let us blow up in peace, it looks like there's absolutely no reason why anything would want anything to do with us other than say, stop. If something came on television said, stop right now, I'd believe that. And made us stop. I believe that too.
Well, according to a lot of accounts, that's actually what happened in the 1940s. That Eisenhower met with some extraterrestrials who said, you know, we'll help you, but you got to stop using nuclear weapons and you got to stop using plastic. And they and his advisors said, oh, screw that lot, we want the toys. And they went to the Greys, and this is what happened.
Well, nuclear facilities have not stopped. As a matter of fact, they're pretty much blowing up en masse right now and starting fires. The planet is being poisoned, the waters, the air. There is nothing not biologically changed within the last 5 years. So again, if that happened, why haven't something come down and stopped us? They haven't. They're not here. Or they're just waiting till it's so bad and going to shield us off and let us just die out. I'm not looking for the big save. Sorry. I know other people are, and that seems
could you
sad,
get a boat?
But that's for this planet. You know, I'm for this planet.
What you want is a boat that's moored up the side of your building.
Would like us to be consciously aware. Yeah, I don't see it.
What you want is a boat that's moored to the side of your building. So as the waters rise, it will come up to the level of your flat.
Come get.
And so, yeah, 8 people in a boat, eh?
Yeah, any minute now. I'm looking at the time. I'm happy.
I get terribly seasick, you know. I suppose I'll be better now.
You'll get used to it.
Yeah, I suppose I'll get used to it. Once I've been throwing up for 4 days on end, I'm sure that I'll come to the end of it. Oh! Hang on, that's the think tank coming in. I'll just decline that. So, Trace, thanks for calling in. Look, stop it. Stop that. There you go. All right, Trace, are you there?
Yeah. Yes, thank you so much, Jay, and I'll just sit back and listen. Thanks.
Well, no, we've got another 10 minutes. It was just the think tank calling, getting their call together, so I'll be able to join in with them.
I got that little blinky too.
Yeah. Blinky blink. So, yeah.
Yep.
So, rips in space-time, and, you know, part of what's wrong is this tear. And it's like we're sweeping up the, finding all the real living souls and just making sure that they've woken up enough in time. And I think that's what the idea of, you know, they talk about like the Bodhisattva is the Buddha that stays behind until everybody's enlightened. It might not have to wait that long, you know, because it depends what you mean by enlightenment, and it might just mean just woken up, just out of denial. What do you think?
that makes more sense to me than a lot of things I've heard. We all go or none of us go. Yes, of course, there are many beautiful things on the planet, and most of those beautiful things are now spoiled. I'm close to Toronto, but so what? We had people marching on the street against the Iraq War. It happened. All over the planet, people marched against the Iraq War. It still happened. We are not enough. I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing it. Sorry, guys. Not seeing it. I can't drink. I've got a beautiful river out there. I can't drink that water. That water's poisoned. I can't drink it. So all of the plants and the animals that have for millions of years drank out of that water, they can't right now. We marching, well, we are not marching enough, and I am not seeing us marching and stopping anything. It's not enough. I'm serious. Three nuclear reactors had problems this weekend in the States. They had to say there is a nuclear plume from that one spill that they had on Thursday, but it's been an ongoing problem at that plant. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not seeing it. Yeah, we are irrelevant. We are not stopping it. We, as human beings, should be outside on the street with all of our neighbors, forgetting about the fake color initiative. You know, if this is person is wrong color, that person is wrong one. But we aren't doing it. Not enough. And until we all do it, nothing will stop. And I'm not seeing it. 15,000 people, there are 7 billion people on this planet. That's nothing. You probably go out there and you're all tagged with chemtrails and probably dying slowly right now. Sorry. No happy news from Tracy today, because I'm not seeing anything happy.
It's not a happy new year, is it?
No. I'm seeing happy things inside me. I'm seeing inside myself changing. But outside, no. I'm not seeing it.
I think it's partly to do with exactly what you just said. It's the way we change our focus from what's outside to what's inside. And apparently, it seems to be a healthy option, because people who are focused on their inner being seem a lot happier and more successful in the world and out of the world than those who are not. So, it's got to be something to that.
Yeah, absolutely with you. And I can only go by myself, of course, and everyone feels different things. And I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I'm not you. Because I'm not. But I think I am a piece of you. I think we are all part of the same thing. And if we all started looking in, I think things could change immediately. I don't think we're going to see it walking on the streets. So as much as my physical body is in pain, and I know a lot of people's is, my physical life is not perfect right now, but inside, I'm doing the best I've done in my whole life since I was a kid. And I'm okay with that. I'm really okay with that.
Yeah. So, this is where it's where the rubber is hitting the road, as they say, because we are trying to change things and they don't seem to be affected by it all. Don't seem to be. They're doing their best not to make it look like they're at all vulnerable. But we know that they are. And that we can work it, as long as we know what they're doing and where they're, what they want, then we can... Here's how I say it. Here's how I see it.
Okay.
If in our lives we make individual choices that mirror the choices that we need to make in the macrocosm, so if we, for instance, don't want to support aggressive behavior that is warmongering, then I don't want to support it. That, and if I support it, that means I'm giving energy to it. So if I'm paying something, so if I'm paying insurance to some company that I know is connected with warmongering, if I stop paying them, then that unfunds them, as far as I'm concerned. And if my idea spreads out, and other people do that, then the thing can collapse. But until we stop buying Coca-Cola, until we stop buying Monsanto products, that's anything with aspartame in it, any diet drink, which also is going to kill you, you know, that's how we defeat them, I believe.
The basic things, the day-to-day things, stop eating the poison, yes, will help. But I do believe that every sentient being in this multiverse is connected, that we are all part of the infinite all. We're all part of that. And if we started looking in, we can do that together. We could change everything. They could change, first of all, the area around you, your town, your city, your family, the people you start talking to. They change. I believe outside, from what I'm seeing, looks horrible. Because it does. I'm watching my beautiful plants and stuff dying, my beautiful waters becoming polluted and horrifically dirty. Animals just with boils on their skin. But I'm also realizing that if we started acting consciously, like the animals and the plants do, like I haven't seen the trees outside because it's right near the poison river, saying, you know what, I've had enough of this crap, I no longer want to be a tree, that's it, and getting up and deciding to be a rock or something. It's funny, you don't see trees doing that. A rock saying, no, I'm not talking to that rock, it's been sitting here for like 45,000 years and I've just had enough with its silent treatment, I'm leaving.
You again.
It's you again, really? You're still going to sit there? No, I think if we could be just who we're supposed to be and look in and spend some more time doing that. And I'm not talking about doing certain meditations or doing, you know, special magic words or the abracadabra. I'm talking about being still and quiet and stopping the Tower of Babel, which is in your head, because it keeps going, da 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 da. Try to shut that up. I think things will be so much easier. And I think it'll be easier right away.
If everybody let you get on with what you wanted to do.
Yeah, I think if people allow themselves to get on with what they want to do. But first they have to be quiet for a minute. And be aware of themselves. Most people aren't aware of themselves. Although, you know, I see people who can meditate for 4 hours, but they are not aware for more than 3 minutes. What they're doing is sleeping. They're sleeping, you can see it. They're not aware, they're not conscious of their body. If we could just try that for 1 minute, if we could all do it for 1 minute, I think if the planet did that for 1 minute, things would change, because we wouldn't allow certain things to happen. The ones that, you know, are still going outside and still thinking that they're separate or better than someone else or something else or other animals or other plants or other rocks. It starts changing when you start really paying attention to yourself. It just does.
And I think that's really the aim in the other way. That's what we're being distracted from. We're all, yeah. I'm sort of figuring out the Illuminati's ploy, the powers that be. Their ploy number one is divide and rule. So anything that separates you from your brothers and sisters, you know. And number two is distraction. So, you know, we're forced to look outside instead of in. We're forced to look up instead of down. All that stuff. And so ploy number two is distraction. So the remedy for ploy number two is refocusing, to focus back in. and feel what's happening. I like to sometimes, you know, just sort of sit and say, okay, what's happening in my base center? How's my skin and everything like that? You know, all those systems. It's like a systems check, really. As if I was running a spaceship and I had all these guys and they got the clipboards and they have to check each knob, that each knob has its particular effect and does what it does. Otherwise, the safety of the journey, of the mission, is in peril. So it's important to do that. We have to be astronauts in our spaceship human body. What do you think?
Love that term. No, it. We've heard many of the doctors and naturopaths come on and say our body is made up of billions and billions of different cells and viruses and fungus and, you know, 10,000 things living on us. We are our own cosmos. We are our own planet. If we can't take care of that, we have one thing we're supposed to take care of. If you can't take care of yourself, I think you shouldn't be looking elsewhere yet.
It's true. We need to know. First of all, we need to know how to look after ourselves. When we can do that, then we are able to look after others, because we realize that everybody's only got the same needs. We've all got the same needs. You know, like we were saying before, a few weeks ago, discussing the whole idea of food and eating and things like that, and in our other conversations, you know, I'm feeling that eating food is a default position. It's like, if there's nothing else that is powering the human skin suit, if that plasma spark isn't bright enough to run this whole show, it kind of defaults to, like, okay, what's around that I can eat? And you know, you start sort of tasting things and looking at things. But until that time, I suppose, you know, most of the time it's just kind of like, you know, what can I mine? Let's see if I find a piece of gold here, or find a diamond. Is that what it's about? Is that how we were built? To just go in there and just mine for diamonds? No, I think we've got more purpose than that, haven't we?
I think so. Because it doesn't actually say anything anywhere in the tablets at all, Sumerian or Babylonian, about us mining gold. Gold is only mentioned a couple times, and it's for bracelets. And there is no god involved in it. Sorry, guys. Another thing we were lied to about, and Sitchin was paid by, guess who? Rockefellers. Surprise, surprise. No, we are more than that, and if we still buy into the only thing we can do really well is worship some big blonde guy or sandy-haired guy, or, you know, that picture of Jesus, which is really Caesar Borgia, you know, that's not a life I want to live. I think we're a lot more than that.
I think we're going to have to leave it there.
That selfie would have been done, Sandra, you said.
So, listen, Trace, we got to leave it there. It's the 58, and it's time for us to go. Thanks very much for coming on the show with me, and it's been interesting swapping our book ideas. I think it may be an interesting thing. Maybe we should just do that, read some books.
I think that too.
Always makes me fall asleep when I read a book aloud, though, because you know, you know. You know. Anyway. Thank you very much, everybody. Stand by. Bye bye. Healings and meditations. Thank you very much, Tracy. Beyond.